And finally, a rediscovered recording project brings voices from Haiti's past back to life. The late Alan Lomax learned his trade as a folklorist by working with his father, John Lomax, recording the field songs of black sharecroppers in the American South. In 1936, at the age of 21, Alan was dispatched to Haiti by the Library of Congress, his mission to record and film the music and culture of the Haitian people. In little more than a year, Lomax and his newlywed wife, Elizabeth, made some 1,500 recordings, capturing rare music and sounds across the country. Here's a sample. The collection is now being released as a 10-disc box set, along with Lomax's journal and other artifacts from the expedition. Joining us now to tell us more from Toronto is Gage Averill. He's an ethnomusicologist and a professor at the University of Toronto. He was the project's curator. And in New York, we're pleased to welcome Ellen Harold, Alan Lomax's niece, who also worked on the project. Welcome to you both.
Good. Thanks, Michelle. Nice to be here.
So, Professor Averill, this project was started in 1936. What took so long to hear these recordings?
I could describe when I first encountered this, and this was in interacting with Alan's daughter, Anna Lomax Wood, who was running the archive. And she asked if I'd be willing to work on this project and curate it. And I said, what recordings? And I was a specialist in Haitian music, so I had no idea that there were these 1,500 recordings sitting in the vaults at the Library of Congress. And I think that was true. They were just unknown. Alan hadn't written very much about them in his time, and so they were literally sitting in stacks covered by cardboard covers all that time.
Alan, can you tell us a little bit more about what Alan Lomax and Elizabeth Lomax's conditions were working in Haiti at that time? It was a pretty tumultuous time in the island's history, as I recall.
Well, I think it was a time of hopefulness because the Marines had just withdrawn and they had left a representative government there, and there was a great interest among Haitians in their African heritage. And as far as their conditions, Alan arrived there, and of course he was very lonely and immediately caught all kinds of fevers. And his fiancée, Elizabeth, who was then 19, arrived somewhere in early February. And she actually made the films that are included in the box.
Do you happen to know what the process was that they used to record this material? I'm thinking now, you know, we could wander around in something that would be the size of a credit card, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking it wasn't like that then.
Imagine a very large box weighing 55 pounds, and it had two turntables on the top. And it would record directly onto 10 or 12-inch aluminum discs with a stylus. So he's there recording with a disc playing, and it would scratch or etch the sound into the disc. So in addition to carrying the 55 pounds of recording device, he also had to carry stacks and stacks of aluminum discs, because each of these recordings could be just as little as 3 or 5 minutes. So there was a lot of weight to carry around.
Ellen, can I ask one other thing? I understand that he was sick a lot when he was there. Is that true? So in addition to lugging around all this equipment, he was sick a lot.
They were sick, and they went out into the northern part of Haiti, and they were paying people, you know, a small sum when they could to record. And so people started coming and camping out in their house in order to play for them. And because they were sick, they couldn't get rid of them. It was really quite a dilemma at times.
Oh, dear. I'll think next time I complain about the hotel accommodations on an assignment. Ellen, you mentioned that Alan and Elizabeth arrived there after the Marines had left. The U.S. Marines had occupied the country from 1915 to 1934, and he's arriving just a couple of years after the Marines had left. How did people respond to this couple wandering around with this stuff wanting to record their music?
Well, I think they were delighted that someone wanted to record their music.
Well, let's play a recording and then you can tell us some more about it. Here it is.
This is called Merci Papa Vincent, which means thank you, Father Vincent. And it's for that president, the first president of Haiti following the American invasion. And this was a jazz band playing at an elite club on Christmas Eve.
I was going to say, it sounds like a jazz that Americans would have heard. Do you think that there was a cross-influence, as it were Americans hearing Haitian music and were Haitians hearing American music at that time?
The Americans stationed in Haiti during the occupation were hearing Haitian music, and the Haitian musicians were also hearing jazz and dance band music from them and turning it around into, like, local meringue jazz fusions. So there was quite an active cross-fertilization at the time.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with Professor Gage Averill and Ellen Harold about the great folklorist Alan Lomax and his time in Haiti. Professor Averill, who do you think will appreciate this?
Well, there are, as we've seen in the past 30 years, a growing number of people all over the world interested in kind of encountering new sounds. This is going to be quite a new repertory for people. I mean, there's everything in this from Boy Scout songs of the 1930s to old Mardi Gras and carnival songs that are topical. So these are dealing with the issues in the 1930s. So there's people who love Caribbean music who will find a great deal in this. I think it's going to have an enormous effect on people interested in issues of cultural equity and cross-cultural encounters around the world.
Ellen, you mentioned that some of the religious music of voodoo ceremonial music was recorded. I'm going to play a short clip and hopefully you can tell us a little bit more about it. What can you tell us about this song?
I can tell you that from the diary that Alan said that he really wasn't that focused on ethnography and explaining the theology of voodoo, but that he did want to document the sound of it.
That's what separated Alan from all the other people working in the country, is that his methodology was focused on the sound recordings, right? So other people were describing them or notating them or talking about the context, but Alan left this archive. In this case, what you're hearing was recorded at the first voodoo ceremony ever recorded more or less in its entirety. So this was a ceremony in Pont-Boudet for what they call breaking the cakes or sharing the cake. And this is a song for Dambala, who's a deity associated with snakes. And the song simply says, Dambala Wedo Tokon Kulev, or Dambala Wedo, which is the name of the deity, the sign of the snake.
These recordings are so old, and yet they're sort of a discovery, really, kind of a new discovery. They're important to the Library of Congress, but also, I would think, to the people of Haiti. What do you think we will find in these recordings? Ellen, why don't you start?
Well, I think it's going to be a wonderful thing for the Haitian people, because the Association for Cultural Equity had an ongoing repatriation project to make these available in Haiti. And Kimberly Green of the Green Foundation has said that preservation to support cultural identity is an integral part of poverty mitigation.
Really? Why?
Well, because when people hear and know their own past, it often is very empowering. Alan certainly found this when he recorded people. He would play it back to them. They would be delighted.
You think that perhaps there are, say, children growing up in Haiti who would never have heard maybe the music of their forebears?
Sure. Not just children, but many of the elders that we consulted with and we'd call about this material hadn't heard this maybe since the time of their early youth or heard about some of this music from their parents. I remember I was asked to introduce Catherine Dunham, this sort of very well-known African-American dancer who had been in Haiti just before Ellen. And I was up on stage, and I was about to introduce her, and I looked down at my computer, and I remembered I have, you know, Alan's 1,500 recordings, including about 300 that were made with friends of Catherine Dunham in the same peristyle or the same temple that she used to visit. I went over to her and I said, Ms. Dunham, would you mind if I played, you know, old friends, Taylene Marseille? And she was thunderstruck. She'd never heard any of this and knew that it existed, and got up to speak afterwards in tears, talking about how I had in my computer a govi, or a spirit repository, which is a notion from Haitian voodoo. And so all along, that kind of notion that we are in some ways stewards and guardians of all this cultural richness and personal investment was a real motivating factor to try to get this out and to do the job.
Gage Averill is the curator of the newly released 10-CD box set titled Alan Lomax in Haiti. He joined us from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation studios in Toronto. We were also pleased to be joined by Ellen Harold. She is Alan Lomax's niece, and she also worked on the project, and she joined us from our bureau in New York. Thank you both so much for speaking with
us. Jill, thanks so much.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more tomorrow.
Finally this hour, an innovative guitarist and composer from Brazil. His name is Egberto Gismonti. Our reviewer Banning Air has been listening closely to Gismonti's latest release. It includes a disc of orchestral arrangements and a disc of guitar music. And Banning Air finds that second disc so stunning he can't stop listening to it.
Back in the 70s, Egberto Gismonti was one of the genre-bending ECM label's great discoveries. Classically trained in Paris, he wove jazz and Brazilian traditions into a sound so expansive he needed 10 strings rather than 6, and created his own explosive picking techniques along the way. Okay, this track from Gismonti's new release is actually him playing with his son, Alexandre. But however many strings or hands are involved, there's no mistaking Gismonti's ferocious attack and roiling rhythms. Gismonti mixes the lush voicings of classical composers, Ravel is a favorite, with the lively cadences of the Brazilian string music called choro. Choro began as a folksy instrumental genre going back to the 19th century. It grew to incorporate jazz harmonies, and you can hear its echoes in this piece, aptly titled Two Guitars. There are three fine solo performances here, one from Egberto and two from Alexandre, but the seven tracks where father and son converse with breathless intimacy are the real payoff. The music is serious and highly technical, but also playful, and there's an entrancing sweetness in the interactions. Sounds get under the skin quite as readily as that of bare hands plucking nylon strings. The Gismontis make you feel the physicality and sensuousness of every note. Their palette of sounds and ideas is so broad and varied that the music is impossible to classify. Just call this session the most exciting guitar playing you're likely to hear all year.
Banning Air is senior editor at Afropop.org. He was reviewing the guitar music from a new double CD by Egberto Gismonti. It's called Saudações.